Okay, so welcome. Today I'm joined by Ben Albert. Ben, welcome to the podcast. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, Mark. Pleasure to be here with you. Ben Albert. I run a marketing firm, Balbert Marketing. I host a network of podcasts, Real Business Connections. At the end of the day, I'm just a curious person that like to have authentic conversations and learn from people like you. So I'm here. I'm an open book. I'm curious as to where this will go, and I'm excited to be here today.
Excellent. So you were telling me about your struggles with anxiety and how it's affected you and still affects you to some degree. So when did anxiety first become an issue for you?
So, of course, when you're younger, you don't know how to define these kind of things. I remember it had to have been about third grade. I remember this moment vividly. I have to use the restroom, and I'm quite literally pacing back and forth, walking in circles, probably tensing my mouth, holding my crotch. And one of the lunch monitors comes up to me and says, "Hey, Ben, would you like to use the restroom?" And I didn't have words. Mm-hmm. So I just sort of kind of sheepishly nodded. And then they escorted me. I didn't want to go alone. They escorted me to the restroom, so on and so forth. And I remember that specific moment from when I was really young. Because randomly, I don't know, I was the shortest kid in school. I was the second shortest behind a young girl, Olivia Lee. Mm-hmm. And I remember just my whole childhood just being shy and never being the life of the party. And quite literally, I realize this now, I would make myself smaller. So when I'm holding my crotch and trying to make myself smaller so I'm not seen, that was not solving any problems. I needed to use the restroom. Mm-hmm. So I realize this now, but I had some of these underlying anxieties, potentially shame or fear, most of my life. Up through the first 12 years of my life, other than best friends and people close to me, that was a scenario. I was never I wanted a hamburger with fries or a chicken sandwich most of the time. I wasn't the one ordering. It was my parents' ones ordering it for me. So you look back on it, I wasn't on medication. I wasn't actually treated for this. But my understanding is I had a lot of anxiety and fear that I might not have even been aware of at the time.
Mm-hmm. So third grade, how old were you? How old would that have made you?
Oh, see, now I need to go back and do math. So that would make me what, like 8 or 9 years old?
Mm-hmm. And you were the shortest kid in school.
So I guess realistically, I was the shortest kid in my class all through grade school. So when I was in, you know, fifth grade, I wasn't the shortest kid in school, but I was always the shortest in the class. So it's always shorter than my peers.
Mm-hmm. And did that lead to you being bullied or?
Not to a drastic extent. You know, I got pushed around a little bit. I wasn't like beat up quite as much as I saw other people. I was really good at being non-confrontational, and you know, I knew who bullies were, and I would just dip out, get away from the confrontation well before it ever occurred. So I feel like I was always good at hiding and not creating a scenario that someone would want to bully me. But obviously, I was an easy target. I wasn't going to fight anybody back.
Mm-hmm. So did you feel vulnerable?
Yeah.
And okay, and then later in your life, can you tell us about your other experiences with anxiety as you went through school, and what else occurred for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's I was never the chatterbox. I always kind of had that underlying social anxiety. I think a lot of us deal with it. A real issue that I created for myself, and part of it was mirroring, my father was a heavy drinker, and I didn't even realize it at the time, but I was drinking for most of my childhood. So starting high school, I kind of got into that party crowd, and there's, this weird, beautiful thing about drinking and smoking pot when you're in high school. Suddenly, you actually don't have that much anxiety. You're just like chatting around, and the fears kind of go away, and you stop giving, a breeze about what people are saying about you. Which I don't think was smart because I was starting to actually make some of that social anxiety and insecurities worse, because I was becoming reliant on the drinking and drug use in social scenarios. Like that's how I socialized.
So you use drink and drugs to try and suppress the anxiety and make you more social.
Yeah, and sometimes I don't know if I'm just even suppressing the anxiety. It was just that that's the people that accepted me. So it was like a social norm that if they're smoking weed and drinking, oh, well, now I have my people. I don't recommend this to anyone, but that is my story.
So your father was a heavy drinker. Was he quite a dysfunctional household or?
I'd say yes and no. Yes, in that, two parent household, two kids, no significant physical abuse or not too much fear or stress in my life. I think a lot of sweeping things under the rug, though. So not as much conversational love or just really conversation about those hard topics. Because one thing that's interesting, I actually didn't realize this, it's coming up right now. I never really went and saw a counselor or a therapist. And I look back at my weird quirks that I had younger, I'm kind of surprised that no one took me to talk to someone to see if I was going through stuff. But a lot of things in my life were swept under the rug or not talked about. Don't ask, don't tell. So it was none of this was prevalent or present in my life. I see now how the narratives kind of created themselves, but I don't think I realized much of it at the time.
So there wasn't much kind of emotional connection. You weren't really encouraged to talk to your parents.
Yeah.
And your mum, did she have any issues with anxiety or?
She does. I don't know what comes from what, but she has multiple sclerosis, which is a degenerative disease, and her thinking has, had struggled and deteriorated and required medication for thinking and physical health. Nowadays, especially, I feel like some of her anxiety is just like her being hard on herself. Again, we're talking about when I was younger. I don't recall it being a discussion. So I don't think I knew whether she did or not. I just knew that she had, this disease, and when it came to like paying bills and negotiating things regards to the house and just anything that involved those like monetary decisions and some of the major household decisions, my father would make them. For whatever reason, that's just how it was.
So your father, you say he was a heavy drinker. Was he drinking like alcoholic, or was it just that when he drank, he couldn't stop?
So I don't entirely know because it's not like he was falling over the place, throwing things. He was very secretive. He did have his man cave. And the thing about the man cave is he could go and drink, smoke pot, whatever he wished, and just kind of be guarded. I do recall he was bloodshot most of the time, so that could be an indicator. But it was, there was no like outward, like there was no like outward identifying signs that a young person who didn't know much about this stuff would have been able to totally realize. I kind of realized more later on than I did at the time.
And you think that he might have been doing that to try and suppress his own emotions and cope with his own anxiety issues?
I think it's a reasonable guess.
Hmm.
He's not with us now, but that would be a question for him. I can't tell you exactly, you know?
So, when we're children, we're looking to our parents to help us co-regulate our emotions. And when a baby's in the womb, they can pick up on, everything the mother feels. So if the mother's experienced a lot of anxiety, baby's going to pick up on that. They're going to experience anxiety as well. And then once we're born, we're looking to our parents to help us co-regulate our emotions. So until the age of three, a baby can't differentiate between themselves and the outside world. So again, if they're around parents who are anxious, they're going to become anxious. A lot of people suffer with anxiety and they don't know where it came from. They don't think they had a particularly dysfunctional childhood. They felt loved, they felt that their parents cared for them and were there for them. But very often, as I say, if you're growing up, around anxious people, you're gonna pick up on that and it's gonna form your beliefs of the world.
Makes sense.
Also, people, when they're anxious, when we experience emotions, we can either act out and become narcissistic and abusive ourselves, or we can act in through substance use, emotional eating, that kind of stuff. So people who have anxious parents, anxious parents can often act out on their children and maybe put them down or call them names. Dysfunctional families tend to think it's funny to take the mickey out of each other and put each other down. And so as a child, we're looking to our parents and caregivers to help us understand the world, help us understand ourselves. Neuroplasticity is at its highest. So if your parents are anxious and they're trying to cope with that by projecting their own fears and insecurities onto you, you're going to internalize that. You're going to think it means there's something wrong with you. So you may, some people, grow up with that kind of thing and they don't attribute it to their parents. They attribute it to themselves and that they're the ones that are broken and need to be fixed. So
What are your thoughts on even just the need to be fixed? Are we broken? Are we need to be fixed? I feel like that's limiting in itself.
yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, there's a presupposition in NLP that no one's broken, right? emotions, again, defining emotions as good or bad, and feelings as good or bad, again, that's limiting because, this is a societal thing. Society teaches us that it's bad to feel depressed or bad to feel anxious. Anxiety is part of the fight or flight response. It serves a purpose. when we experience anxiety, the symptoms are designed to help us get out of danger, to fight back or run away, such as the increased heartbeat, which gets the blood flowing around your body,
mm-hmm.
gets the blood delivered to your muscles so that you can react. Depressed feelings, you know, everyone has depressed feelings from time to time. Everyone feels a little bit down from time to time. Those kind of feelings can alert you to when there is something wrong in your life, when you need to make some adjustments in your life. You know, if you were a prisoner of war, you never felt depressed, there'd be something very wrong with you. So yeah, you know, society, you know, dysfunctional families and just school, family, you know, everything teaches us that it's wrong to feel, and there's something wrong with us if we express our emotions. Anger is, you know, the main emotion that we become shamed out of as children. We get told it's bad to be angry. And without anger, you know, that opens you up to, you lose your defenses. So that opens you up to more and more abuse, more and more bullying. And then again, you're going to internalize that. It's going to create toxic shame, you know, feeling like there's something wrong with you. So you went to college and you were smoking a lot of weed, drinking. And then what happened after that?
Yeah. And it's interesting because at one point when I was, you know, smoking weed, it was like, it was cool or fun to be high. Like I liked it. But then I recall being in, you know, college, being in class and like not being able to sit still and not being able to focus. And at two occasions, I actually just got up and walked out because I quite literally couldn't sit in that place. So it's funny because again, maybe I had some tendencies when I was younger and then I was making them worse with the way I was doing things. And another thing that didn't really happen all that much when I was first, you know, drinking or smoking weed is later on, I don't know what, you know, neurologically or chemically went on, but it became incredibly common that, I don't know the whole explanation behind it, but the term they like to use is hangxiety,
mm-hmm.
where you drink and then on the next day, the consumption of the alcohol actually makes your anxiety, for me, like tenfold what it would be if I hadn't drank the next day.
Mm-hmm.
The most difficult part about anxiety for me personally is it's a trigger to want to drink more to make it disappear. But it's the body telling me that something's wrong. So that was something that after college and as I was going into like the real world, something that was really holding me back, you know, those previous ways were making me struggle to function on a day-to-day, you know, corporate kind of environment.
Yeah. So did your anxiety affect your work life?
Mm-hmm.
And so did you struggle to keep a job? What happened then?
I don't think, especially at the start, I never struggled to keep a job, but I definitely struggled to move up.
Mm-hmm.
I found ways to provide enough value that they wouldn't get rid of me, but I wasn't the person being nominated for a leadership role. You know, I'm probably least likely to succeed, first one to go, but I'm doing just enough to get by because I still had that slacker mentality. I feel like I was still suppressing a lot of things at that time, you know, I don't know.
Suppressing things. What were the things that you felt you were suppress.
No, it's interesting. So you'll read a business book or a personal development book, or you'll watch a documentary, and you'll learn something new or interesting, but you'll never actually take that knowledge and go down the rabbit hole to do something with it. So you consume a documentary, it's very interesting. We'll just use personal development. It talks about building habits in this documentary, but you never go and build those habits. And that actually feeds the, I'll just call it a demon, but it feeds the demon that's making you anxious because you have this answer, you have this North Star, the saving grace, but then you're taking action that actually is moving in misdirection from where you feel like you should go, which is just causing more cognitive dissonance and more frustration, shame, anxiety, things like that.
So it's kind of self-sabotage.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So you weren't taken seriously at work. You weren't able to progress in your career. And in your relationships, how was anxiety affecting you there?
Yeah. There's so many moving parts, so I don't know, but I did struggle holding a long-term partner. I was very much in the quick fix phase of my life where everything was short-term, hedonistic kind of pleasure. So I did have trouble maintaining a long-term relationship, and I think part of that was fear. I think part of that was maybe not feeling like I deserved it. Not quite sure, but it was something I definitely struggled with.
So fear, what was the fear that you were experiencing?
Probably just a fear of commitment, a fear of committing to this one thing and having the confidence that I'm making the right decision. Like an anxiety around my own decision as to like a long-term decision kind of was something that I tried to stay away from.
So were there other decisions in your life that you questioned? Were you often questioning decisions? So
Probably.
probably.
I question most decisions. So one thing that today I'm very reasonable and rational, and I'm good at looking at the big picture most of the time. I have my struggles. So I always try to make the best decision. But sometimes by trying to make the best decision, it kind of slows you down from making a decision at all, kind of the analysis paralysis. So I feel like a lot of times I'd make a decision, but then I'd second guess the decision I made. Or I should have, shame based kind of, I should have made this decision. Even if the decision I made was quite fine, I still was like, oh, well, I could have made a better decision kind of thing.
Hindsight is a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so what happened? Was there a point in your life where you felt you needed to deal with the anxiety, where you felt you needed to take steps to overcome it? What happened there?
For me, it wasn't just like an overflow of inspiration. I really feel like there was just like a slow sink drip that was going for 10 to 20 years, really. Because being small and being a quieter kid, when you're younger, you get into like, well, let's learn a little bit more about confidence and persuasion. And, nowadays I run a marketing company and it's great because I've learned so much about the inner workings of crafting a persuasive method message and telling stories and all these things. And when I was younger, I was learning this kind of stuff, but like I said, I was never implementing it, which would just make me more like kind of just anxious in the fact that, oh, I have the answer. And at one point, let's say just out of college, I could spew out the answer and give advice, but I wasn't in alignment with the advice I was giving. And at some point I just stopped giving advice because I realized I was in misalignment. So I see like this slow sink drip of filling my cup to where, you know, slowly I just started making small changes. My father died basically from his alcohol and drug abuse. That shook me up a lot. Started spending a little more time in nature. As everyone knows, you just start getting older and you start maturing. And I still at that time was quite anxious a lot of the time and not making all the best decisions or not living in alignment with where I believed I could go. But it's the past 2 years have been huge for me. Cause like I'm anxious in this conversation, not like to a significant point, but I still have these anxieties. But it was right around COVID time. It was actually before COVID that I already kind of made a decision that I needed to start making changes in my life and really like just implement a lot of the stuff I've learned. And remove a lot of these things, remove the anxiety by not drinking. Like it seems like a no-brainer. If you have anxiety, why do you have a hangover? It's because you chose to. So when COVID hit, for a minute, I was actually in a bad place. But when I officially decided to leave, it's tough because I was furloughed and then they asked me to come back. This was at the start of COVID. But after the furlough, it was a temporarily kind of thing. I decided not to go back because quite honestly, I was miserable. So Mondays especially, like I'd go in and some days I'd self-medicate just to like calm down because I was so stressed and so just unhappy at work. So leaving that job that was giving me a ton of anxiety and stress, getting rid of a lot of the things that were causing it, and then implementing habits that would actually just make me feel better. Everything from drinking water to just living a life more aligned with gratitude. The past 2 years have been a wonder for me, but I'm here to be authentic and talk about the truth because, like I said, I still have anxiety a little bit right now. I'm a little eager. I woke up this morning 3 hours earlier than expected from a nightmare and felt my blood pressure go up and felt a struggle to kind of lower that and ease in. So again, I feel like I'm a massive work in progress. It's been a slow drip kind of out of a faucet, but nowadays I feel like I've really turned the heat on where change is happening, but I'm definitely a work in progress.
Yeah, as I said before, you know, anxiety is part of fight or flight response. We need it to keep us safe. So it's not something that can ever be completely eliminated from our lives. We're always going to feel it, you know, a little bit. Some of the things that I teach clients is to, you know, practice mindfulness, to meditate, to have a kind of daily relaxation routine, maybe Qigong or yoga, to, you know, get outside in nature, maybe walk in nature, and to just become more mindful. And then when those feelings come up, we can become aware of them. And Carl Jung said, what resists not only persists, but gets stronger. So you feel a feeling and you think, you know, this is really bad. I shouldn't be feeling this. And you try and suppress it and fight against it. You're giving it energy. What you want to do when you feel that anxiety is to just, you know, ask yourself, is this relevant right now? Is this feeling trying to tell me something? Am I in any kind of danger? And, you know, if you're not, then you can just, you know, get on with your day and just allow it to be there, to just accept it. And then you know, the more you do that, the more you'll stop feeling anxious like that, and the more you'll be able to feel calm. And again, you know, as I said previously, it always goes back to childhood, in my opinion, or, you know, some kind of trauma. Anxiety is always caused by childhood or some kind of trauma where we become conditioned to react, you know, anxiously. Maybe we're growing up with a lot of dysfunction, we become hypervigilant. So we're always on the lookout for danger. And when you experience trauma, the amygdala, the emotional part of the brain, actually grows larger, and the thinking part of the brain shrinks. So again, by having a regular meditation practice or a regular relaxation practice, you know, you can actually make the amygdala shrink down and increase the thinking part of your brain. So yeah, a regular kind of relaxation practice is very important. And you were telling me that you have a morning routine. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, and it's funny because I've been doing the routine for like 6 or 7 years. That's part of the slow drip, but I was doing so many things that were not aligned with my morning routine and the relaxation that it wasn't until recently that I started feeling some of the full benefits. And I originally took it from Hal Elrod's The Miracle Morning. Have you heard of that routine?
I haven't.
So I won't go through the big why and all the details and stuff. It's a great book, and you know, tens of thousands of people do this routine from this book that he created, that he quite literally did. And he's gotten through cancer twice. He's had a tough life full of struggle. The routine he does, the acronym is SAVERS. S for silence, A for affirmations, V for visualization, R for reading, and S for scribing or writing, journaling. So I've adapted and made it my own. You know, one thing is I wake up, I chug a glass of water first thing. I go, I do some, you know, jump rope, get the body flowing. Yeah. I've got different nootropic medicines and multivitamins I take. I read a little bit. I write. I have 3 different sections in my journal. One of them's to talk about the previous day, one's to talk about the current day, and then I keep a list of just a brainstorming list where I write down 10 new things every single day, which allows me to really kind of just be an idea machine, really. And one thing that I haven't been doing actually as much, but it's part of my prep for the day, is just a gratitude list of 5 things I'm grateful for.
Yeah.
All that journaling takes me like 5 minutes. It's just a quick hit. We did the exercise, the reading, scribing, silence is you're reminding me that I need to spend more time in quiet and listen to my breath, because nowadays I've kind of been a little bit cheating on it, where I'll do maybe 4 sets of breathe in 4, breathe out 4. But it's a quick ritual, but I believe I probably could benefit to extend that ritual and have a little bit more time in silence or meditation. And then affirmations, I mean, that's literally just, you know, talking about my future goals, but being them now, and I am statements. And then the visualization, where I was struggling to get into the feeling for a while, but really just visualizing where I'll be and what those affirmations mean, and trying to feel what that will feel like to be in that position in the future. Who, honestly, I deserve that position now, but kind of just visualizing where I'm going and who I am. And doing that first thing in the morning, and again, I'm not perfect. I sometimes do check my phone. again, I woke up super early from a nightmare, was anxious, checked my phone, and put myself in a bad, an anxious state by the nightmare and the phone. But when I sleep good, I eat well, I don't touch my phone, and I go through that habitual morning routine, by the time I start my day, I don't feel the anxiety doesn't just come on for no reason. Mm-hmm. There's certain things that could trigger it, but I feel like I'm in a good position to go out and win the day calmly, and really just do the best I can to have the best day ever.
Excellent. Yeah, visualization, you know, as I say on my workshops, your mind can't tell the difference between a real or an imagined event. So by visualizing yourself the way you want to be, you actually create new pathways in your brain. And then you can start to kind of unconsciously become that person very effortlessly without, you know, even realizing. So visualization is very, very powerful. Obviously, journaling and gratitude, looking for things to be grateful for. Again, programming your reticular activating system, that part of your brain that sorts information and looks for things that are relevant to you. So if you're looking for things to be positive about, you're going to find more things to be positive about. So that sounds like a very effective routine that you have been.
It's kick butt, Mark. It's effective, but as you know, it's great to win the start of the day, but then if the rest of your day you make decisions that just put you in an anxious place again, and that was, again, I've been doing this for over 5 years, but it wasn't until I started to get rid of some of the things that were making me anxious that I started to get some of the full benefits of that morning routine.
Yeah, absolutely. So you got rid of the alcohol and the other stuff that was making you anxious. And so since you reduced that anxiety, how has your life improved? What benefits have you noticed in your life?
Yeah, I mean, there's the external benefits. Like, I started my podcast in November of 2020. We've got 5 segments. I'm not here to talk about my podcast, but we have 5 segments with over 150 episodes. Mm-hmm. So I've quickly created a lot of content, met brilliant people. I've been building my business. And I just feel so much more aligned with more of my purpose in life. I can't even tell you that I exactly know what my purpose is, because I feel like I'm a work in progress and I'm still learning and exploring, but I've never been more excited to get up and do that routine. I've never been more excited to go to work. Now, granted, I'm working for myself, but it doesn't feel stressful, and my environment doesn't make me anxious. It's just really exciting, knowing that I'm a work of progress and knowing that I maybe was slowly dripping, and suddenly I just feel like I'm skyrocketing to the moon. I want to stay humble, but I just feel like, you know, the future is going to be really, really bright because of it all.
Excellent. Thank you, Ben. Thank you for joining us. Where can people find you again? Can you tell us where people can find you again, please?
Yeah. So the easiest way is check out the podcast. If you check out the podcast, you'll find links to the marketing and all of that. But just do one thing. Type in Real Business Connections. You can type that into Google, or you can type that into a podcasting app. Listen to the show, connect with me there. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm everywhere. But if you type in Real Business Connections, you'll be able to find me.
Excellent. Thank you, Ben. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Mark.